This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Staub Audio Engineering. If you have listened to any of the episodes, you have undoubtedly heard me talk about Mike and the phenomenal audio engineering work that he does. His mixes and masters are truly some of the best that I've ever heard. I love working with Mike on all of our Dreamfield tunes, on all of our Summit One tunes. He is an absolute wizard. Make sure to hit him up, inquire about mixing and mastering prices, and take your tracks to the next level. Oh, yeah. And Mike is also one of the nicest, kindest human beings you'll ever meet. Definitely hit him up and work with him.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all of the producers, artists, and creators that are tuning into the show. My name is Cody Christensen, and you are listening to the Chilled Samples Podcast.
Dude, welcome back to the podcast, man. It was an absolute pleasure to get a sneak peek at your upcoming album. What an incredible compilation of tunes, and there's so much to talk about the creation of the album, your artistry, your story. Your reputation within our community, man, it's always funny if I bring your name up or if somebody else brings your name up and we're just like, yeah, that dude is too talented. So I'm stoked to have you on, man. And, just to kick this off, brother. Yeah. How you doing?
I've been all right. You know, I'm just basically getting off break. Well, almost off a break. I still got a couple weeks left, but, other than that, I've been all right.
Awesome, brother. And break from what?
School. I'm actually going into my junior year of college right now. I'm majoring in music industry with a minor in marketing. So that's kind of been my life right now. And I have no complaints.
Awesome, brother. Well, that's absolutely incredible. Where are you going to school?
I go to school down in Columbia, South Carolina, an HBCU. That's historically black college/university for the people who are watching outside of the U.S. I go to Benedict College.
Benedict, nice, man. Awesome. Let's run it back, man. Let's start at the beginning of your story, because I know in our last podcast we did dive into your story, but that was a long time ago, dude. So I think it'd be beneficial for the listeners to figure out where you came from and how this music journey started for you.
Well, at the young age of I was around 2 years old when I started discovering music, and it kind of started with just sort of listening to music. And it's funny how my first love was actually Broadway music. My mom used to, like, I remember this very, very clearly, that my mom would just have me, like, sitting down on her lap, and we would listen to the soundtrack of Rent. And that was kind of like where my first love was. And till then, and I don't necessarily believe her, but I've heard stories that I've started singing before I started speaking. I don't know if that's entirely true, but I will just go with that. Just, you know, kind of as sort of the basis of my story. So that started for a little bit. And I've always had a love for singing and stuff. And then throughout time, it's sort of kind of involved with me playing different instruments like the keyboard, the bass guitar, some drums, mainly actually all the percussion, but I kind of stepped away from that, try to focus more on the keys for now. And kind of the rest is history.
Yeah, well, and David, I want to keep rewinding you, dude, because that is a... I think your approach to music, one, becoming interested in music at two, and of course your mom saying that you were singing before you were talking, which I believe, that's not necessarily every musician's story, man. So I want to dive into that further. So, like, as you were starting to pick up these instruments, like, what age were you at, and, like, were you doing private lessons? Was it through elementary school and middle school? Like, walk us through that in detail, dude.
Oh man, I gotta think about this, cause when I was learning different instruments, obviously they happen at different times, because when those different times hit, obviously my interest started to peak about those instruments. So you know, obviously I started singing when I was two, so I've kept that up for a while now, and I'm still keeping that up. My primary instrument in college right now is actually voice, so that's good. When it came to the keys, I kind of have like interesting memories about it, because I think I started playing like a little bit of it when I was, I'm going to say like 4 or 5, but again, I don't really remember. But what I do remember was me playing when I was around 11, because my elder sister came home from break and she brought back this, I want to say like it was a 49 keyboard. It was a 49 digital keyboard, and it had like a whole bunch of sounds and presets on it. And she started playing. I was like, oh my goodness, this is amazing. I want to learn how to play. Mm-hmm. And I literally like sat down, and this was during winter break too, when I was in elementary school. Yeah, this was around fifth grade. I literally just sat down for like hours on end, just learning how to play these different songs. And surprisingly enough, there were video game songs too. So I was like, it was really cool. So yeah, she played songs from Final Fantasy IX, Chrono Trigger. And it's funny too, because given my age, you wouldn't think that I would actually know these games. Oh yeah, no, I do. I know all about that. Like, I'm a retro gamer, honestly.
Wow, that's fantastic to be able to kind of infuse like double passions, you know, like infuse gaming and your music education by learning how to play the songs from those games, which is incredible. Yeah. So so that's all happening at home. What was happening at school during that time?
So, man, this is also hard. So funny enough, I never took in any lessons when it came to the keys. I'm completely self-taught. With voice, I definitely kind of fell out of it. Like, my love for, you know, singing and all that wasn't really, really that much of my love anymore at a certain point, because it I hate to bring this up, but it kind of gives a little more context of where I exactly came from. So, like, when I was little, I think around like 5 to up until like my freshman year of high school, I've been bullied heavily. Like, I've had to deal with that for a while now. And music was pretty much the only thing that was keeping me alive at that point. And the reason why I fell off at the time when I was making, or when I was singing, right, is because I was singing a whole bunch of repetitive songs that no one didn't want to listen to anymore. So I just felt like there was no point in singing anymore. So up until 5th to 8th grade, I stopped singing. Like, I wasn't in choir. I was still in band, but I wasn't in choir anymore. So I kind of fell off of that. And then back in 8th grade, I kind of found my voice and I felt more confident in singing. And I can even say now, like, I used to like make a whole bunch of vocal tracks, and I wasn't very confident in those vocal tracks because I didn't felt like that I was a really good lyricist. So, you know, that's kind of where that came from. But now I got some stuff coming out with some vocals. I'm very excited to share that with all of y'all. So I can't wait for that.
Which is beautiful, David. And I'm sorry to hear about the bullying, man. And I'm assuming you weren't getting bullied by people in the band program, if you were sticking with it, but was it like people in the choir program or just people in school? Or
it was people in school in general. See, when I obviously, this is still going back to me when I was little, but I was disciplined. Like, as a young black kid, that doesn't happen a lot, and that's sort of the stereotype that I kind of hate right now, because it's still going on. And I have neighbors, right? And they're young. They're really good kids. Like, I'm being very serious. And it just makes me want to be that role model for them, for real. Because I don't want them to go through the same thing that not only that I've gone through, but maybe other people that I've grown up with. I don't want them to go through that, through what they probably been through. So I'm trying to be, you know, a really good role model for them as best as I can, trying to make sure that they don't get in trouble, trying to make sure that they, you know, pick up after themselves when they leave trash and stuff like that. A good example of that actually happened, I want to say like 2 weeks ago. So when I was little, I used to go to people's doors and ask them, like, you know, if I can pick up your trash. And if you want to pay me, that's fine. But, you know, obviously I'm just doing this voluntarily, so they didn't have to pay me. But, you know, it'd be very appreciated if they did. But regardless of that, I still was able to, you know, pick up the trash and, you know, make sure that their lawn was clean at the best of my ability. And that was when I was little. And that happened like 2 weeks ago. Someone knocked on my door and they were just like, hey, can we pick up your... I was like, wow, I can't believe that happened.
Wow, David. Well, that's incredible, man. And so when you, it's beautiful, like being a role model, through your actions. Like, I don't think there's any better form of inspiration that anybody can try to aspire to be, right? Like, I want to be the best version of myself, and hopefully people see that and that inspires them to be the best version of themselves. So, that's extremely commendable, dude. And appreciate so when it. when you say you were, yeah, man, well, it's well deserved. So when you say you were disciplined as a young kid coming up, you mean just like disciplined in the way that you are already operating your life?
Yeah, actually. See, my dad was never around. I haven't seen him since I was 4. And my mom had to kind of step up to be not only a mother, but basically, I hate to say this, but the man of the house, for real. Because I was too young to understand what that actually meant. So she had to discipline me. And every time I was bullied, it was always a life lesson. It was always a life lesson. Because I had to understand that I don't have to do whatever they're doing just to get back at them. Like, I have to better myself as a person just so something like that doesn't happen to anyone else.
Incredible, man. Incredible. And that's a lot of weight to carry as a kid coming up. That's a lot of weight, but those lessons I'm sure are certainly paying off now. Wow. Yeah. Your mother sounds absolutely incredible.
She's amazing.
So you said you were finding, yeah, it sounds like it, man. So you were finding your voice in eighth grade. So kind of walk us through like the high school years, man. So we had this, you know, you were getting bullied, and then we had this kind of resurgence of identity, if you will. And so what did that look like rolling into high school? Because I mean, the last time we talked, dude, you were still in high school.
I was, which is wild, yeah.
Because you've been crushing it since then, dude. You've been crushing it since then. So kind of walk us through that, man. Cause you had like hundreds of thousands of people listening to your music, you know, before you were legally an adult.
So I take it back. Bullying didn't really stop until like freshman year, for real. It was, oddly enough, I found out like last year that I was neurodivergent. And for those who don't know, neurodivergency means basically that your brain just works a little differently than what is considered to be normal. So and it sucked too, because I didn't fully understand what that meant for me, because I would say something and people get mad all of a sudden. I didn't understand what I said. And that kind of like led to me just kind of being alone and kind of just being to my own, basically. And and what would happen is I would just, you know, start making music. Like, I would spend hours on end, like, on the keyboard, like more than I've spent when I actually started playing the keyboard. So it just kind of led to that. And obviously I wasn't mad. If people didn't like what I was saying, then who am I to change their, you know, change their perspective of me? Like, whoever, like, I really was like that. Like, I didn't care if I was liked. I didn't care about being anyone's friend. What I did care about was being respected. That was basically kind of my number one priority. Because what I was doing was for basically the good of what, you know, I was trying to do, and that was music. So I was trying to advance that music, funny enough. And it basically kind of just led to me kind of being a little isolated. But I wasn't upset with that isolation because it gave me enough time to think about, like, what was up with me. So obviously it led to me finding out that I was neurodivergent, and I couldn't be happier enough that I found that out myself before anyone else did. Because now it just basically shows me that no one isn't going to understand me more than myself. And I'm okay with that. I really am okay with that.
Yeah, dude. That's beautiful. And so what exactly does neurodivergent mean? That's the first time I've ever heard of that.
I'm going to have to search this up because I don't want to give you false information. Because like I said,
fair enough, dude.
Like I said, from my own words, it's just how my brain just works differently than what is considered to be normal. And I say this with phantom quotations because normal is such a broad term now because everyone's brain works differently. But mine just kind of just works in different places. Like from Cleveland Clinic, the term neurodivergent describes people whose brain differences affects how their brain works. That means they have different strengths and challenges from people whose brain doesn't have those differences at all. So I wasn't like the best at sports, for example, but I basically challenged myself to be better at music and trying to create whatever I can. That's kind of like an abridged version of that.
Yeah, dude. Well, and it makes sense when it's being able to like identify those strengths and getting past the question of like what's wrong with me, and like instead of asking like what's wrong with me, it's like, oh, what's different about me, and how does that difference actually turn into
exactly
strength?
That's exactly how I felt, because with me finding out that I'm neurodivergent, like one, like my whole perspective of me changes, but it also doesn't really affect my music. Because you know, throughout time, I'm always evolving, and that's the same with everyone, obviously. Like, everyone's evolving, everyone's changing, and not only through their mental and physical perspective, but through, you know, their perspective of how they perceive other things as well. And the way I perceive other things is basically how I change as well. Because when I perceive different things, it allows me to critically think about how this affects me as just a person in general.
Mm-hmm. Which is incredibly fun, dude. It's like once you truly pursue that path of like understanding and accepting that life will forever change, like the way you think, the way your body acts, like everything's in constant change. But if you're always looking at it looking at it from that point of self-discovery, it becomes pretty fun, you know, especially like, let's say you haven't thought about a topic for a year, you know, like you don't have to latch on to the idea that you previously thought you had. You can revisit it and be like, oh, what do I think about it now?
Yeah, it's funny too, because that's exactly what I've been doing. I've been reminiscing about the times where people have kind of just been like, dude, why would you say something like that? Like, it's stuff like that. Like, I've been reminiscing about that. And I'm just like, was I really in the wrong? Like, I probably should have, like, you know, explained it more better. Like, I've been, you know, thinking about stuff like that. And I have no, again, that's something I don't have an issue with, because it helps me reflect. It helps me improve as a person. And I know people would kind of feel like worthless reminiscing is kind of, you know, pointless. But, you know, it actually helps. Like, it helps you improve as a person, as I mentioned before, because when you're reminiscing about your past, it kind of just makes you realize, like, damn, I really came a long way, didn't I?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, dude. Well, and it's so important because we're like, you know, Lego blocks. You know, every year we're putting a couple new Lego blocks in place to... Yeah, we're putting some new Lego blocks in place to create the structure that is us. And sometimes it's like, oh, I put these blocks in the wrong spot. Like, I should probably take some of these down and maybe put them over here. And yeah, exactly. And it's fun. It's good to ask. It's good to reflect and ask why, because it's so easy for us to be in a routine of habit. You know, and it's important to be like, oh, wait a second, why do I do this? Or why do I believe this? Or why do I enjoy this? And I think it's great to be able to check in and ask why. Otherwise, you know, sometimes we can just continue to do without intentionality.
That's been my whole summer.
Just
self-discovery.
Awesome. Beautiful, dude. Well, and hopefully that's every summer for the rest of your life. That's the beautiful thing about it, man. Okay, so we're in high school. So you're in band. When does music production come into play? And when did you officially launch your project to the public?
Okay. Are we just talking about like the Sync.exe project in general?
Yeah. Or was there any projects before Sync.exe?
Yes, there was.
Okay. Let's run it back, dude.
I don't remember if I mentioned this when I was on here the last time, but yes, I did used to be an EDM producer and I went by the name. And, oh, this was back in 2015. And I remember it very well. December 24th, yeah, Christmas Eve 2015, I had a laptop. It was a shared laptop with my family because we didn't have like a home computer at that time, or just waiting for it to get fixed. But I downloaded a free trial version of Magic Music Maker. Before I found out about FL Studio, which is my main digital audio workstation. But before that, it was Magic Music Maker. And at that time, I was just messing around with samples and stuff. And I was just like, dang, I should put this on YouTube. And I did. The first song I ever made was called Pufferfish. And that's kind of where the origin started. But I wasn't Sync.exe at that time. I was Music Max 13. Because I had a gaming channel and I kind of just was like, it'd be a clever idea if I just changed the first part of that. And I was just like, yeah, I'll just roll with it for a couple years and so. And I did. And I started just making music, like EDM music. And I slowly started to realize that it was getting a lot more minimalistic than what EDM music is supposed to sound like. And whenever I was submitting to like Artist Intelligence Agency or Monster Cat, for example, I would always get rejected. So I was just like, what am I going to do? Like, what am I supposed to do? And then around that time, and I remember this part very, very, very clearly because this moment would change my life forever. So this was back in this was 2018. I was a sophomore at that time in high school. It was a cloudy day. I don't exactly remember why I was upset or depressed, but I just remember like putting my stuff down. I didn't even do my homework. I just got on the keys and wrote my first official lo-fi song as, you know, Sync.exe. It was called Destination. And I finished it in one day and I released it 2 days afterwards. And apparently that started to set the bar high with a project that I honestly cannot even believe that I came up with.
Incredible. Damn. Dude. Well, one, I love that you were coming from the electronic world because I still have my toes dipped in the electronic world, certainly.
Hey, I may come back. You may never know. I actually may come back. I'm thinking about it.
I hope you do, because as I was listening to your album, I was like, damn, imagine this like turned into a dubstep tune or a future bass tune. So I think you should, but we'll get into the album. Something interesting that you said, that so like when I was coming up, middle school, high school, like none of my friends, like honestly, I mean, social media was pretty new at that point. Like I graduated in 2012. And so like we were on Facebook, but like nobody really thought about like having their own channels. Like, of course we were on YouTube, but like, no, the idea of like creating your own show wasn't there for us. Those ideas like didn't happen until college, of like, oh, I can actually broadcast my own show. And so you talked about having a gaming channel. So kind of walk us through like the development of that. So were you thinking about like being a streamer and a musician like simultaneously, or was your first show like the gaming channel? Like kind of walk us through that.
Because yeah.
For people, I think it's unique for people of your generation, right? Of like growing up with the opportunity to start a channel when you're super young, you know, when you're 13 or 14 or 15. Kind of walk us through what that was like.
I think I was like 11 when I started my gaming channel.
Damn. That's wild. That's so wild.
Oh, geez. Man, you're making me go back. You're making me go all the way back for this. I started my gaming channel back when I was 11. And honestly, I didn't really think much of it because, truth be told, music for me wasn't like kind of like my go-to future at that point, especially when I was young, because, you know, like I said before, I had a love of, you know, video games. I wanted to be a game designer. So, you know, I kind of just basically drowned myself in a good way. I drowned myself in, you know, gaming, learning, like playing new games, learning about coding and stuff. And thank God I kept that, you know, intact. And that kind of just started for me. And then that was, yeah, back when I was 11. And then like 3 years later, I just said, you know what, let me try making music. Because when I had my sister's piano, I actually made my first like original composition, and it was called Alpha Storm. And I started doing that. I was just like, you know, it'd be really cool if I actually got this on like a digital audio workstation, and I was able to like actually create it and actually make it into a song that I can, you know, at least release on YouTube at that point, because I didn't know how the hell to release on Spotify and Apple Music at that point. So that all happened. And then it wasn't until like eighth grade where I realized, oh, okay. So I think I'm just going to make music my full-time like dream at the moment.
Man, what? So you were a sophomore when you released your first Sync.exe tune, correct? That first lo-fi tune?
Yeah, that was 2018. Yeah, actually. Well, first it was a future bass, but we're not going to talk about that. But
Yeah,
it was literally my first one.
How long did it take from your first lo-fi release to start gaining some traction? To realize like there's thousands of people listening to your music.
This happened during COVID. So yeah, 2020, I was just getting off my junior year of high school, and I realized that like people that I've collabed in the past before, they're like getting all these streams, and I was just like, I wonder how they doing that. And I found out about Submit Hub, and I was just like, all right, you know what? Let me just go ahead and submit destination on it, see what happens. And then, you know, some playlist creators like Chill Select, Stereo Fox, all those people saw my music, actually gave me a chance. So I was just like, yeah, I think I'm going to start doing this from now on. And I just like started making lo-fi tracks, and I was just like, yeah, this is it right here.
Man, so how is that feeling being like 17 years old and having the numbers that you did? I guess, well, how did it feel for you? How did it feel for your friends? And like, how did it feel for your family to like look at your profile and be like, dude, that's hundreds of thousands of people. Like, what? What is that? Like, that's a lot of people.
So this is a crazy contrast, because I like, it was cool at first, and then I started to humble myself, because what happened is, like, you know, after Destination came out, and then like 2 years afterwards, I submit Hub to all these playlist creators. I'm starting getting streams. I'm starting like to have people notice me for real. And then I'm starting to do, you know, all these collaborations. I'm just like, man, this is crazy. And like, you know, being the age I was and looking at it now, I was very numb to it, because as cool as getting all these numbers, like, does it really matter at the end of the day? Like, I'm still gonna make music. Like, that's all I care about at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's literally all I cared about at that point. Like, and you know, as stuff started to happen, like, you know, one of my biggest collabs was with Farnell. We released Echoes with Chill Beats. And I was like, dang, this is crazy and all that stuff, you know, 3 mil, like, but I wasn't bragging to anyone. Like, I wasn't bragging. The only person I was bragging to were my family. Like, there was no, like, mm-hmm. I had no reason to brag it to anyone. Like, I'm a very huge believer of having my actions speak louder than my words. So there's no point in me saying anything, mm-hmm. because at the end of the day, like, you know, nothing's going to change. I'm going to still make music. And regardless of how many streams it gets, like, it doesn't matter. Like, it's just, I'm gonna make music.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. That's an extremely healthy perspective to have at such a young age. And dude, I totally forgot that it was Farnell that told me to have you on that initial episode. Until you said Farnell, I was like, oh yeah, it was totally Farnell that was like, hey man, talk to this kid, which is incredible. But it's such a healthy perspective to have it at such a young age. And I think regardless of the success or lack of success, if you're doing something purely out of the love for it, like, that's the dream. And for you to understand that at like 18 years old is pretty incredible, dude. That's pretty incredible. But it certainly had to affect your career outlook. So aside from the numbers,
I think I have something to say about that.
Sense. Yeah, please.
Oh yeah, you picked the perfect time to talk about this, because now I'm at an age where I have to figure out if I want to do this as a hobby or if I want to do this as a career. Because this happened like just recently. Someone like some executive, I won't really go into it much, but he was like, he asked like us, because I was part of this like, you know, little school band and all that stuff. We were playing like our original stuff and you know, basically all that. And you know, he was asking us like, what are we gonna do after college and stuff? And you know, me having, you know, a pretty good solid star at the moment, I was just like, I guess I'll just, you know, keep doing what I'm doing. And he was like, oh, you release music? That's a hobby, not a career. And I looked at him not as if I was confused, but it was kind of like he said that as the dumbest thing ever. Because at the time, I was like annoyed. I get that he doesn't know me and all that stuff. And he was like asking me like very personal questions. Like, how much are you making? You know, as an independent artist, we make different, you know, values depending on the month or depending how good our music is doing. So I couldn't, you know, give him a straight answer at that point. Like, I couldn't. And when I did, he was like, all right, you know, talk to me later after this is all over. I know a lot of people around the world. And that just made me upset. Like, that rubbed me off the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, clearly, you know, obviously he doesn't know me. So I, you know, I give him the benefit of the doubt on that. But still, it's just like, bro, like, come on now. Like, you really had to, like, do that. But this is something that I realized. He was kind of right. And I hate to admit something like that because I'm a very prideful person. Like I can say that. Like I don't say much. I'm a very prideful person. So, you know, I take that into a lot of consideration. And now, even though, you know, I'm still in school, I can't say that what I'm doing right now is a career because, you know, I still got school to worry about. You know, grades are more important than, you know, making music at the point. And especially since my rollout has been, you know, kind of just sitting because I have all these songs that are prepared to come out at a certain time. And that's kind of how I've been organizing myself just so I wasn't stressed when I was, you know, at school and trying to make sure that these releases came in. Like I have a pretty good rollout at the moment. So I'm not complaining on that, but still, like, I have to figure out, like, do I want to do this as a hobby still, or do I want to do this as a career? Because there are two contrasting differences with that. And the more I think about it, it's like, geez, like, am I, like, I can't be making music for fun anymore. Like, and it's just like, that's the most important thing. Are you going to do this for fun? Like, are you going to do this for fun? And I started to get very serious about what I was doing because, you know, back in high school, I had a lot of people kind of like downgrading me for real. They were like, oh, you're not good and all that stuff. Like, there are people out there better than you and stuff like that. And I was just like, it made me very serious. And I don't remember if I mentioned this in the last episode, but I definitely did get rejected from Berklee College of Music. Yeah. And it was like, dang, this is like, and I remember like a part of the rejection letter saying like, this is like, you know, it's very competitive and stuff like that. So, you know, I'm at the age right now and I'm at the point where I have to ask myself, like, what do I do to start getting serious about it? Because I am, like, you know, still serious about it. But, like, I have to start thinking about it more. Like, what do I have to do to kind of get that perspective and to understand, like, you can't be just making music for fun no more. You actually have to, like, understand that you have to, you know, get serious. Like, you know, the process of making music can be fun. It should be fun. Because, like, you know, you shouldn't be stressed about it, obviously, when you're making music. But you kind of have to, like, think of it as, you know, marketing yourself to be, like, this very serious person.
Yeah. Well, David, I'm gonna interject a little bit because myself and I know any other artist in our community that's familiar with you, that's listening to this episode right now, just wants to like shake you by the shoulders and be like, of course, this is what you're going to do, dude. You're too good. You're too good not to. And I think the attitude that you have, the humbleness that you have is really good. But I'm going to speak for many people in our community of, you know, that's laughable. We want you to pursue music as hard as you can forever, dude, because you're seriously one of the most talented people in our community. You really are. So I think you have to, and I think as long as you keep having fun and keep making the music that you want to make, everything else will begin to fall into place. And you don't have to stress about it. And So that's my opinion on that. And that executive,
I ain't
just
got
like
no
you
choice
said,
no more.
Yeah. So that's my opinion on that. And with the executive, just like you said, dude, he's right for most people. He is right for most of the individuals that try to pursue this. One, because the talent might not be there. And if that's the case, the work ethic might not be there. Right. And just like you said, like he doesn't know who he's talking to. And that having that confidence in yourself and that pride, I think, is extremely important. And I kind of have that same mentality. If like, if somebody tells me I can't do something, you know, it's like, oh, okay, watch. Well, you know,
I was about to say, exactly. So I think because that's good. I stared it down the whole time while I was playing. Like, I did not bat an eye. Like, I literally stared him down while I was playing.
Yeah, well, and I think having that confidence is certainly important, because pursuing life as a full-time creative, yeah, our chances are slim. And given slim chances, you know, that means we have to work a little bit harder, which is okay for people like us. You know, that doesn't scare somebody like you or somebody like me. It's like, you know, we say, okay, bring it on. We're in. Yeah, dude, especially after listening to this new album, like, you gotta keep having fun. I guess that's the most important thing. But yeah, continuing to put out music, and I have full confidence that things are going to work out just fine.
I appreciate it.
But let's. Yeah. I'm not worried for you. That's for sure. So you got rejected by Berklee, which I'm sure stung. Which is also one of the best music schools in the world. So not getting into that, you know, that's a pretty high bar. And so not getting there is, you know, like I'm sure it sucked, but walk us through finding your next college and then, majoring in music industry, minoring in marketing. Like, how did you make that next step? Like, once plan A didn't work, like, walk us through discovering plan B.
This is cool because this happened in 2021. So this was around the same time, you know, we filmed my first episode of, you know, being on this podcast. So everything is, you know, kind of coming in together, because this was also the same year I started working on Equinox 2. Wow. So yeah. So get rejected from Berklee. And I kind of just making a little side project. It was an EP, like a fall theme EP that I was working on. And I was just like, I didn't really think much of it. I was going to submit it to a label like Lo-Fi Girl. I didn't really think much of it. And, you know, I'm trying to figure out, like, you know, I can't really go anywhere else, because this was around the time where my mom was just getting out of surgery. So, you know, financially, we couldn't really have the time to apply to any other school. Berklee was basically my only choice that I had. And then as around the time I was about to graduate, like, I want to say maybe this happened around May. Excuse me. My friend, my childhood friend, calls me and he's like, hey, where are you going to school at? And I told him, like, I ain't got no choice but to go to community college right now. And he's like, nah, screw that. Apply to Benedict. And at that time, I was just like, oh, I mean, okay, but what about, you know, application fees? And he's like, they're waived. I was like, oh, really? Okay. So, you know, I'm checking that out. And obviously, you know, my friend was going for music, so obviously, you know, they had a music program, so at the very least, I was going to look at that, until I found out there was kind of like two fields of study. You had music ed, and it was basically, you know, teaching and stuff. You had to learn all different instruments and understand, like, the fundamentals of those instruments. And then you had music industry. And music industry is kind of just like, it's kind of hard to bridge it, but it's basically all stuff people should know in the music industry, from like mixing, live mixing, marketing yourself, management, all that stuff. And I was like, okay, let me see about this. And, you know, obviously I got accepted, and, you know, I was very happy, because it was basically my ticket out of, you know, getting out of Elkton, because I did not want to stay there at that point. Like, you love a city so much, but you can't stay in it for too long. Like, especially such in a small town such as Elkton. So, you know, I go down to Columbia my freshman year. It's the biggest culture shock ever. Because I am in a predominantly white suburban area. So we don't get mm-hmm. the opportunities in high school to know about HBCUs at all, like whatsoever. There's a very mm-hmm. low talk about HBCUs, and you have people like from Towson, Frostburg talking about their schools and stuff, but you don't hear like places from Morgan State or Bowie State. I can't remember. I think it's just Bowie, but you know, those are HBCUs in Maryland, but you know, you don't hear about that when you're in Elkton. You don't get a chance. Like, you kind of have to find that out yourself. So it was just basically mm-hmm. just me discovering that myself. And it was probably one of my biggest culture shocks ever. The biggest ever, because I was surrounded by people who looked like me, who kind of had the same interests in me. Like, it was amazing. But, you know, obviously I wasn't accustomed to that at that time. So I was like, man, I want to transfer. I don't want to be here no more. This isn't for me.
Really?
Yeah, because I was like I had that attitude of kind of just being, I hate to say, but I was kind of like a little whitewashed a little bit. Like, I wasn't, again, accustomed to being in an HBCU. I wasn't accustomed to being around people that looked like me, kind of talked like me, you know. I wasn't accustomed to it at all whatsoever. So, you know, I was just like, this don't feel right. But then I kind of was just like, yeah, nah, this is where I want to be. And now in terms of the album, because this was very important, because if I wasn't in Benedict, this album wouldn't be here. Because it was like September 21st. It was a school night and I wasn't really doing anything. I was just making some Avino type beat, because Avino is actually kind of one of my favorite artists for real. And I was just like, huh, this kind of reminds me of Spring a little bit. And at that time I paused FL, and like my eyes just go wide at that moment. It was like the words Equinox 2 was just like in my, like, was on, like, it was painted in my head for real. And I literally stood up from my chair, paced around the room for like 20 minutes being like, am I really gonna do this? Like, am I actually going to commit to this? And yeah, that's when it all started.
Wow. Incredible. Man. Well, sometimes there's like the flashes of inspiration happen, right? Like, I love hearing a story like that where it's so simple yet so magical all at the same time of like, how did it happen? And yeah. It was like that, you know, like that, exactly that split that. Second. It happened, just happened, which is, you know, which is kind of like what we were talking about earlier of being, always being perplexed by self-growth, is like allowing the magic to happen. Is like, there doesn't, you don't have to explain it further than like you were sitting there and it happened.
Exactly.
Which is incredible. And
it is it.
Yeah, man. Well, and I want to touch on the importance of culture shock, because I think especially at 18, 19, like that's a fantastic time to kind of experience culture shock. And I guess based on my own experience, so I grew up in a small town in Iowa, like farming community is where I grew up. And I went to Fort Lewis College in Durango, Colorado, which is really close to the Four Corners area. So close to New Mexico, Arizona, Utah, and Colorado. Those are the four states that touch each other. And at Fort Lewis, we have a tuition waiver for Native American students. So at the time I was going there, the student body population was 36% Native American. And so coming from Iowa, like the only Native American tribes in Iowa that I was aware of, that I was close to, they owned casinos. And so like my perspective of Native American communities was like, oh, well, okay, they have, you know, because they have casinos and they have nice communities because they make a lot of money from the casino. And then of course, moving to Durango and being extremely close to the Navajo reservation, you know, it was, of course, it was eye opening of like, oh, that is not the case for all Native Americans within this country. That's for sure. So, and I was also coming from, you know, like an agricultural based non mountain community. And then all of a sudden I'm in the middle of the mountains. And so it was certainly, it was culture shock. It was scary. It was exciting. Every day was filled with like learning something new, you know, like another funny culture shock. So like moving to Fort Lewis. So like growing up in Iowa, you know, like I was in like FFA and I thought like Monsanto, the company was always presented to me as like a great company to work for. You know, it's like a financially successful company and they're like the people behind Roundup and, you know, genetically modified crops. And like to me, like what I was taught, like genetically modified crops are fantastic. Like it helps. It helps you farm, right? So like I remember it must have been within the first semester and like people talking about like Monsanto's the devil. And I was just like, oh, like, OK, I have something to learn here. But So I experienced culture shock in my transition from high school to college, and it changed me in so many positive ways, man. And I'm grateful for it, and I'm grateful that, you know, I wasn't uncomfortable enough to be like, yeah, I'm going home. Like, yeah, this is too different. So it's cool that we share that experience, and not everybody does. A lot of people do, not everybody does, but I think there is benefit of like of leaving your hometown at 18 and it's like, okay, let's go test something new out, man. But back to the album,
we like to call that getting
lost.
Walk
us through. So yeah, I like that, dude. Getting lost, to be found. I like that, man. Okay, so you have this flash of inspiration. Now walk us through the process of piecing this album together.
I literally spent that whole day, like, it was like around 10 o'clock. I did not go to sleep that night because I was trying to, like, map out, like, exactly what I want. Obviously, it was going to have the same output like the first Equinox did, winter, spring, summer, and fall. But this time, it wasn't going to be, like, kind of like random or anything when it came to the song list. Like each of them are going to have six songs. Each of them are going to have the six songs and then intro and outro. I was basic mapping. And then obviously my number one rule was not to half-ass any of the songs. Cause that was a very important element to have because I needed to give myself enough time to make sure that I had to get the songs ready and just have enough time to like be like, oh, if something doesn't sound right, maybe I should fix that before like 2 weeks before it came out. Like I did not want to do that because I have a history of doing that for sure. So that was the number one rule. And then one thing that I actually did a little bit differently than the first Equinox is kind of having like its own little like kind of like nickname for the seasons. Like winter became the majestic season, spring became the nostalgic season, summer became the upbeat season, and fall became the changing season. And that would kind of just map out the songs just a little bit more when it came to actually creating the tracks. Fall was, you know, obviously easy because I already had that finished. All except for like a couple of songs that needed to kind of just change. But, you know, that's not as bad as spring. I scrapped 12 songs from the spring section. Like, geez, that was bad. Wow. I had some tracks that were kind of like, oh, you know, but it wasn't exactly what I was looking for. Like, you know, for the nostalgic season, it was kind of going back to my roots for real. Going back to that 80s, 70s funk, hip hop, R&B, neo soul kind of era. So I had to make sure that I kind of had all those songs be basically have that same aesthetic throughout that whole section. And there were songs that didn't, And I was like, yeah, nah, I'm not really fucking with it. So I was just like, okay, maybe put that to the side. And then I tried something different. I was just like, okay, yeah, now we're talking for real. So spring has a special place in my heart.
Dude, well, it was an absolute joy to listen through all of the tunes. And one, I love the diversity. I love the you leveraged and worked with a lot of talented collaborators, but then two, you really demonstrated your ability to create quality music across different genres while infusing different genres. Like, there's so, like, it was a treat, man. Like, I didn't know what was coming next, right? And having that feeling listening to an album, especially an instrumental album, is so exciting, you know, to have the track start and be like, I wonder where he's gonna take this. And then for it to go where it does, it was a true pleasure and a true treat to be able to listen through, man. So the intentionality and the care that you put, and the scrapping 12 songs, like, that's intentionality, like that, and that level of care that you put into the album it can be heard, man. And I can't wait for all of the tracks to be dropped and for our community to be able to listen through. And I have a feeling that it's going to inspire a lot of great art and inspire some other people to be like, you know what, maybe I should take some risks and just try to make music that's fun.
Exactly. That was the main thing for me, is to make an album without limitations. That kind of became the theme for that album. Just kind of create something that fit, but was completely different throughout all the songs, throughout all the tracks. And I wanted to make that very clear, because it was kind of the idea of asking myself, I was just like, couldn't this really be considered a lo-fi album? And it's not like in the matter of fact that I was mad about the fact of it, because, you know, there's genres in there that obviously kind of don't fit that case when it came to, like, if we're comparing, like, my old songs, for example, like, that doesn't really compare as much to the lo-fi tracks I was making back then. So, you know, it was like, okay, let me just make the stuff that I want to make instead. I feel like people kind of just look for validation, like, wherever they can get it when it comes to, like, making music. That's why, you know, back when I was 18, I stopped giving a shit about the streams for real, because it didn't matter. Like, I'm not looking for other people's validation. I'm just looking to make music because I love making music. It's simple as that. And I really was just like, yeah, okay, let me go ahead and just make an album that tests that, you know? So I was just like making that album without limitations to just really get my point across. Like, whatever I make is just whatever you get at this point. And if you don't like it, I'm okay with that. Because as long as I like it, at least, or maybe even a couple people like it, then I'm satisfied for real.
Wow. Yeah, man. Well, and I think, once again, I think that's an extremely mature artistic perspective to have. And I think that perspective is going to allow you to continue to make great art, because this album is great art. And I mean, it's inspiring me to break some bounds, and I have a feeling it's going to do that for our community as a whole, which is beautiful. And David, in closing, man, as we near the end of this conversation in this episode, when does the album fully drop?
The album comes out August 14th, 2023, on a Monday. And promotion is going to be fun. I have, like, what, 21 legends. Like, I don't exactly remember. It's more than 20, though. But these people have definitely shaped the album. If it wasn't for them, like, it would be a completely different album for real. Like, their help obviously made it a million times better. And I cannot thank them enough for their contribution whatsoever.
Oh, beautiful, dude. Beautiful. Ah, I love collaborating. I love working with other talented artists. That was a beautiful statement. Just for literally that, like what you just said, captured what beautiful collaboration feels like. David, thanks again for coming back on the podcast, man, and for sharing your story. And thank you for making great art. And it's been a pleasure to hear your sound develop over the past couple of years. And I'm excited for the opportunity to hear how it develops in the future, dude. And it was a true joy to be able to talk with you, man. And I'm excited to have you back on, you know, in a few months and figure out what else you've learned and how you've grown since then. And hopefully I've grown grown as well, man. So, David, thank you, brother, for real.
Yeah, no problem. No problem.
All right, everybody tuning in, all the links are going to be in the bio of this description. So make sure to listen to this album. As always, thanks for listening. Much love. Peace.